Nacholand Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the first episode of the week of the Calcioland podcast. So we're recording a little bit earlier than usual. We usually do a Tuesday show, but it's a holiday in the U.S. My work schedule makes it a lot easier to record today. So we are doing this before the Milan game, but a lot happens. So today we're going to focus quite a bit on the Inter-Juve game. Alex is here with me today, so I definitely want to learn more about Tomori, who is heading to Milan, so we'll discuss that at the top. We of course have our winners and losers segment of the pod and a special part of the show for patron, but the meat and potatoes of the show is going to be an excellent interview with my friend Enrico Passarella, where we went around Serie A, and that will be available to all. But I'm joined by our great friend, producer, co-host of the show, Alex Goldberg. So Friday we had something came up. Alex, I mentioned on air a few things that Alex wanted our listeners to know about Tomori, but I want to ask you this, my friend. Is about to join Milan. We are recording this before their game today, but they are pretty desperate for center back. So I have two questions. A, tell us a little bit, what do you think he can bring to the table? And how concerned do you think Milan fans should be of the fact he's been pretty much inactive this season, hasn't played that much?
Yeah, it's an interesting one as to why he hasn't played that much this season. It really feels like he hasn't played at all, to be quite honest. But to really close with that, where we are now, and start with the beginning of his Chelsea first team career, and just what I think of him as a player, I definitely think that Milan would be getting someone who still has considerable upside, definitely. So he's newly 23, and he really was part of this new regime of deserving Chelsea youth being part of this new project. And I know it's rough times for Frank Lampard right now, and maybe Frank Lampard doesn't make it out of this and Chelsea eventually do turn into a new manager. But the project Chelsea are building is going to continue with or without Frank Lampard. So the likes of Mason Mount, Reece James, Tammy Abraham, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Fikayo Tomori felt like the Fantastic Five, if you will, or just really the coming together finally of years and years and years of fans moaning about not using youth, but also people who have been part of Chelsea saying, wow, we really need to use our youth more. And Tomori wasn't always as highly touted as those other youngsters I mentioned, your Mounts and your Reeses. However, he was with Frank Lampard at Derby County and Mason Mount at Derby County, and he was really unarguably Lampard and Derby's best player that season. And they had a really good season. Mount did well and other players did well, but Tomori was the player of the year for Derby County. And once upon a time, he was Academy Player of the Year for Chelsea. So it's not like he was a prospect that wasn't respected. He definitely has been a prospect that's been fairly highly rated. But here is the good and the bad, you could say. Tomori is super athletic, super athletic. So to this point, his best performances as a Chelsea player have come when his athleticism has really showed. I think maybe his best performance, and he's had a handful, really the first half of last season was the reason why people other than Chelsea fans would know Tomori's name. He was a mainstay in Chelsea's team the first half of last season. And maybe his top performance was when he, as the kids like to say, David, kept Mohamed Salah in his pocket. He just had Salah in his pocket, which is very impressive. And, of course, he could do that because Tomori is quick. Tomori is athletic. So he can keep up with fast forwards, whether they're wingers or tucked in wingers like Salah or strikers. If you want to test Tomori athleticism-wise, he'll come out pretty good. And if he is too aggressive and he jumps the man, he's got recovery pace and then some. Many regard Tomori as the fastest player at Chelsea, period. So that's pretty impressive. Obviously, they have Callum Hudson-Odoi and they have Christian Pulisic. They have Timo Werner. But Tomori is right up there with the fastest players at the club, no doubt about it. He has good agility. He can move his hips really well. So if it's just purely from an athleticism standpoint, he's going to look really good. I think the bad is branched off of the good. Tomori at this point still relies on his athleticism a lot and maybe too much. So I think to this point, to kind of bring it to now, why he might not be relied on much at all right now is there are areas that Frank Lampard and the coaching staff really wanted Tomori to improve upon, and he really hasn't. So one would be just polishing up as a center back. The big thing that he could not get rid of, even during his good form, was having one bad, borderline nauseating mistake a game. It usually was an errant pass right to the opposition. And it happened once a game, really. Chelsea really never got punished by it, but it was very frustrating because it almost was a lot worse over and over and over again. And the weird thing is, Tomori is a pretty smart kid. He's pretty studious. It's even off the pitch that he's studious. Yeah. He is studying to get a business degree, and his father's been on my pod and thinks all players should be set up for life after football because your career can be ripped away from you tomorrow. All very true, so very intelligent there. Tomori obviously has worked hard to get to this point. He didn't have the flawless run of loans that your Mounts and your Reeses did. Tomori did have some loans where it didn't go all that well, so he's had to fight through it, and he's had to be a student of the game. But it's really perplexed people at Chelsea why he hasn't been able to correct this errant pass every game. And then the other thing that I think has been more exposed this season, David, is Tomori is 6'1", which isn't super tall, but Thiago Silva is 6 feet. So you can still be a very good center back and even be shorter than Tomori. The difference is Tomori needs to not just rely on his athleticism, where Thiago Silva is obviously very athletic. But Thiago Silva's good in the air, not because he's athletic. His height wouldn't help him there. He's good in the air because he reads the ball. He can read the flight path of the ball stupendously. I mean, Thiago Silva is as good as it gets in terms of reading the game. And I would say Thiago Silva in ways is probably exposed to Tomori. And I don't even mean that in a bad way on Tomori. But Thiago is such a professional, such a student of the game, that there's going to be a contrast in training with Thiago versus anyone. And Zuma is obviously gifted in the air because he's so big and he can jump high. So Tomori really has not progressed in the air as well. So especially at Chelsea in the Premier League, at this point, it's really hard for Frank to trust Tomori for two reasons. He still isn't sure if Tomori is going to make that big, horrendous pass once a game. And also, he's just not sure if he can cut it in the air. So that still isn't enough, in my opinion, to have Tomori as fifth string center back. But there are always politics as well involved in football. And I won't really get into those. And some of them aren't all about Tomori. Some of them are about someone like Rudiger talking his way back into Frank Lampard's good graces. So I wouldn't say that a pessimistic Milan fan, David, should think about it like they're getting Chelsea's fifth string center back. He is definitely better than a fifth string center back. But he's still at the age of 23, newly 23, has some things to certainly polish up on. So to kind of wrap it up, I would say that if Tomori can build on his athleticism, if he can really improve his football IQ, but just his understanding of the game and just have the game move a bit slower for him, because I think he's a smart kid. So you hear in every sport, David, when you're new to a league or you're young, the game moves fast. It really moves fast. But when you get older and you're more of a star, you see everything pretty slow. You might move quick, but you read it all at your own pace. And I would say Tomori still needs to take a deep breath in certain areas. And he does need to polish up some things that, yeah, I guess a young player would be known for. But he's 23 now. And if he's going to go to Milan, he's joining a club that's doing really well. So he has to polish up those things. But really, it's somebody who could be a big reward for Milan. So the way I see it, getting him with a loan, but of course there's an option to buy, I see it as totally worth it for Milan, because I know it's not a cheap option to buy. 30 mil is 30 mil, but he would warrant it if he turns out to be a positive for Milan. I know that's kind of an obvious statement, but what I'm saying is he definitely still has the potential to be someone that Chelsea fans would be like, oh man, we should not have let him go. So it's not at all this thing where Chelsea fans are like, yeah, get rid of Tomori. Because I don't think we would pencil him in as a starter right now. We wouldn't. We would have Thiago Silva and Zuma. But I think most Chelsea fans would have him as third string. And still somebody who has promise. So, yeah, I think Milan fans should be excited. I don't think they should be celebrating in the streets. I know you can't do that right now anyway. But I definitely think, especially for a January move, David, it's not your average January move. It's an attractive January move. I don't care if it's a loan or not. That's an attractive January move because Tomori is still someone who could make a name for himself in Europe.
Yeah, you did a great job, Alex. So look, it fits perfectly into Milan was looking to do. Young player who has some experience, a lot of upside. I hear you about the option to buy. I wouldn't worry about it too much now. You got to get back to the Champions League. He helps, has a lot of upside. And as you said, if he plays well, a center back of his age is worth that price. So I think it's a great deal for all involved. Very well said. I appreciated your perspective on that for sure.
No problem. And yeah, last thing I'll add on Tomori before we move on is he is a center back that if you're a fan who gets bored easily of maybe pragmatic football and you always just want to attack, 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 I think one of the things I really like about Tomori is he'll dribble up with it if it gets boring for him as well. And usually he's pretty responsible in that area. It's the pass that can go awry. But he is a center back that kind of feels your frustration if things get too boring. And he'll make sure to get it to the players forward. So he definitely is a player that if I was a Milan fan, I'd be happy to bring in. And if it doesn't work out, really not that big of a deal. Really isn't. All right, David. So maybe this is a big deal to make a decent segue here. And I'm getting a bit pessimistic on my prediction, but we'll see. We'll see. So it's no secret Juve lose 2-0 to Inter. So I got to ask, this did feel like a big result. It really did. So I'll ask you, did we witness last night the end of the Juve dynasty?
It's very possible that we did. And look, you know, I've been thinking a lot about dynasties and whatnot. And, you know, I think of the Yankee dynasty. I used to be big into baseball with Jeter, Rivera. And there's a great book by Buster Olney called The Last Night of the Yankee Dynasty, which is about a game they lost in the World Series about against the Arizona Diamondbacks in a way that the Yankees would have never lost with Rivera on the mound trying to seal the deal for another title. And that was the end of the Yankees. We didn't realize it maybe at the time, but that was it for that team. And I have to wonder if we're seeing the same with Juve. You know, when I look at this Juve, I see a team that is just incredibly relying on individuals right now. And I think of a lot of what Sarri used to say, that this team just did not want to be coached. They wanted to kind of do their own thing. We saw the defense without De Ligt, how lost they are. And I thought Chiellini, you know, at his age, put in as good a performance as he could against Lukaku. But that was that the fact that it was even needed for Chiellini at this age to put in that to make sure it didn't go much worse this game says a lot. And I think, too, of the fact that I think Juve is going to miss Chiellini more than they're going to miss Buffon and Del Piero when they left the club really tells me that this is very likely the end. Because look, as much as I like Chiellini, and I think he's a very, very good player, an elite defender, he's not of the caliber of Buffon and Del Piero. And that tells me that Juve is just in a very different position than they were when those legends left. You know, it's ironic that if this is it, that it's a match against Conte, a match where Vidal accidentally kisses the badge while hugging Chiellini and then scores. And then at the end of the match, you have Vidal trying to hug Pirlo and Pirlo wanted nothing to do about it after the game. You know, it just really feels like this might be it. Look, you know, if you wanted to be optimistic for Juve, you could point out that literally everything that could have gone wrong has gone wrong now, and there's still time. And what I mean by that, it started with the ruling of the game Juve-Napoli that's actually now going to take place. So that started. You know, then they lost bad to Fiorentina, really a terrible game at home. They lose to Fiorentina there. And then COVID hits them really at the worst possible time. We mentioned the importance of De Ligt, and then they're starting wing backs are all gone. And, you know, I also think it's pretty telling that Pirlo, you know, didn't go with Demiral and instead put Danilo in the three center back. It's really the end of the BBC is totally over. Like, Chiellini and Bonucci might still be there. Bonucci's been a liability this season. Chiellini, to me, is a retired player that anything you get from him is really an added bonus. And look, you know, I've said it. I kind of look at Juve transfer windows in recent years, you know, maybe better than I did in the past, because to me, the decision of getting De Ligt instead of a like a Milinkovic-Savic or a Pogba makes sense when you look at Chiellini and Bonucci. But then the midfield, the fact that McKinney is so important to Juve and they're lost without him, it is really another big indictment there. But, you know, you look at the Artur Pjanic deal. You guys know I wasn't big on Pjanic, but Artur really hasn't done much. Bentancur's been up and down. Ramsey and Rabiot, you know, those salaries in this COVID environment are just a huge, huge problem. So, you know, yeah, I get it. If you're a Juve fan, we are right at the halfway point of the season. You can make points. It's not a huge gap. Milan and Juve have one less game each. Milan's playing later today, but Juve has to play Napoli, and Napoli do look better after that win. So Juve is definitely on the ropes right now. I will say this, if they don't win the Scudetto, we are definitely going to look at last night as really the end. You know, also because it was Conte and it was Inter in that way. But yeah, I think if you're a Juve fan, there's definitely reason for concern. Look, I think they were right in getting rid of Sarri. They probably should have never hired Sarri in the first place. But I think, too, you know, all the leaks that were coming from the Sarri camp that these Juve players did not really want to be coached, I think we are seeing it. And the Juve players, they, you know, the president brought in a coach that understood Juve, understood champions, but they're really not responding to him very well. And it goes beyond the poor tactics of Pirlo. It just, this is a team that just seems really at the end. And even you looked at Ronaldo's body language, not encouraging. So, I think if Juve doesn't win the Scudetto, and I think at this point it's definitely long odds that they won't, we will look back at this game as the end of the dynasty. But let's get into recapping some more fun things over the weekend. So let's get into some winners, and we'll start with the winners from the weekend, and then we'll mention the losers. We had on Friday Lazio dominating the derby against Roma. Immobile first goal. Lazzari, I thought, was really excellent in this game. He was a little bit up and down this season, but that was a really tremendous game on the wing for Lazio. Big win for them there. Then we had Bologna defeating Verona. They get a clean sheet. Very rare for them. Excellent game by Tomayasu and a goal by my man Orsolini to give them the win. Then we had Sampdoria winning an important game for them in the race to avoid relegation against Udinese with a goal by Torregrossa, their new addition that just arrived. Then my prediction that Atalanta could be in the Scudetto mix definitely got a setback with a scoreless draw against Genoa. Not a good performance by Atalanta. It seemed like they didn't have much to give here. And kudos to Genoa, who continue to get points with Ballardini at the helm. And then Sunday morning, we woke up with Napoli destroying Fiorentina 6-0. They are a different team when Demme is in the lineup, and also superb game by Insigne destroying Fiorentina 6-0. Then we had Parma, who really probably should have won against Sassuolo. Sassuolo come back right at the very end. Key point for D'Aversa. I was chatting with Napoli Outsider. We were both saying that Parma definitely look a lot better with D'Aversa at the helm. And then we had Crotone with a big win against Benevento. Huge game by Messias, braced by Simi. Crotone definitely have a nice attack for sure. And then of the Inter game, definitely want to highlight Vidal. It was fun with the badge, and then he scored his best game at Inter. I thought Barella was absolutely sensational in this game, and Bastoni was excellent. I think Barella and Bastoni are as good a duo as an Italian young player as you could have right now. You could have as good a duo, but it's hard to do better than these two. So these are our winners from the weekend.
All right. Well, congrats to them. And I want to say Lorenzo Insigne has really impressed me, because you've said it many times when we started this pod. I was a big fan of him, and I'm not saying I'm not still, but I am a little embarrassed to admit that I thought he was done. I did think he was done. And when I say done, I mean based on the standard he had set for so long. But he's come back with a lot of fight. And I've learned something, David. You don't doubt small people like Lorenzo. You know, the smaller the person when they've made it to the professional stage, they usually have that chip on their shoulder, that grit. I know he has a lot of personality, Lorenzo Insigne. So shame on me. Congrats to Lorenzo. Now, the opposite of congrats to this next group, David. Who are losers?
Yeah, look, we've praised Roma a lot on this pod, and they do great against the lower table teams, but they really struggle against the top teams. And there's buzz that the Friedkin group is thinking of potentially moving on from Fonseca. My attitude with that is I need to know who the replacement is. I don't think in and of itself you can say, oh, we just need to move on from Fonseca. You need to make sure who you're bringing in is going to be better. Because at least they beat the bottom feeder, but they definitely got destroyed by Lazio. Ibanez, really a shockingly bad performance. Smalling, struggling this season, not as good as last, to say the least. And then we had Torino, who are up 10 men against Spezia for most of the game and end up with a draw. And look, my inclination was to spray Spezia. I love the way they play. I love their manager, Italiano. But that's really more on Torino. You have to win those games when you're up one man for most of the game in the battle to avoid relegation. So they ended up sacking Giampaolo. They're bringing in Nicola, who had saved Crotone and Genoa last season. I think that's a good hire. Torino, though, definitely in big trouble. Then, as we mentioned, Fiorentina give up 6 goals to Napoli. I've said it all along, that win against Juve, yeah, great. Fiorentina fans are going to be able to talk about that for a while, but had that not happened, Prandelli would probably already be gone. And the more Prandelli stays at Fiorentina, the more in trouble they are. And as far as Juve, I don't want to pick too much on Frabotta and Ramsey, but they got absolutely demolished by Hakimi and Barella. I think that's really more on Pirlo tactically. I think everyone and their mother knew that Juve was in trouble there on that wing. And look, you know, it's not Pirlo's fault Alexandro has COVID, but you got to figure something else out. I thought McKinney would have been much more valuable starting than on the bench there. So rough day for Juve, to say the least. So before we get to patrons, just a couple of very quick transfer updates. Conti looks on his way to Parma, right wing back. Good move for Parma. Did work with Daversa, Lanciano, and Serie B before. Another setback for Juve. Looks like Milik, instead of signing a Bosman with them, is going to go to Marseille. Good for Napoli. They do get some return from Milik. It sounds like it's 7-8 million, and they'll get a big percentage on the future resale. So I thought ADL did pretty well there. And Mandzukic is in Milano. So in addition to Tomori and Mete, they improve every area of the team. I like what Milan's done. I thought their starting lineup was excellent this season, performed well for them. They had to improve the depth. So before we get to Enrico Passarella, for everyone, let's do a quick section of the pod for patron. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. One episode a week will be on patron. So our Friday show will be on patron. Only we have a lot of cool stuff, a monthly chat with Napoli Outsider, which is really excellent, exclusive to patrons. We have articles. I'm actually going to post one today with my updated red chip and blue chip ratings. And you'll be supporting a great charity. We use Patreon to cover production costs and make a donation to the Insuperabili, a great nonprofit in Italy that runs football camps for kids with disabilities. Okay, I'm very excited to catch up with my good friend Enrico Passarella to talk a little bit about everything in Serie A. We're going to touch up the Scudetto race, Champions League, a little bit relegation race, and the recent coaching changes. I always love getting Enrico's perspective on the league. So without further ado, bentornato to Calcioland, Enrico. Always a pleasure to chat with you.
Hi, David, and thank you for the invitation. And as always, Serie A is looking even as a lot to talk about.
Oh, for sure, for sure. So we are recording this. It's Monday morning for me, early evening for you, this is before the Milan game, but there's plenty to talk about. So let's start with Inter's big win yesterday. I don't know if this game really said more about the current state of Inter or the current state of Juve, but I want to ask you, were you surprised by the way Inter dominated this game?
I wasn't surprised by the result because I think that Inter matches up very well with Juventus and it's close. But yeah, I was surprised by the fact that the Bianconeri never really turned up the intensity when they went down in the score and they kept having this sort of pointless possession without really having a plan B and played right into Inter's hands. And the Nerazzurri simply executed perfectly what they at their best at. So I wasn't surprised by the result, but yeah, I expected a little more fire for Juventus. Such a
Yeah. And look, you know, it's been a tough stretch for Juve. We knew they had a ton of games close together. They certainly have a lot of key players out with COVID. They had the ruling in the Napoli match that they're going to have to play that game. Obviously, Inter have been doing better. So let me ask you, do you think this game takes some, is it a big blow to their Scudetto chances? And in your opinion, what does Juve need to do or what does need to happen in the league for Juve to be back once again as a serious Scudetto contender for this season?
Yeah, I think it is a blow for sure. And I think it was a widespread belief that Juventus was still the favorite up to this point, even though they were a little bit behind in the standing. And I think this game changes that, and I would drop them a little in the pecking order of favorites for sure. But I don't think they are out of it yet. There is still a lot of time before the end of the season, obviously. And yeah, the strange things and also the fact that gives Juventus some office, the fact that they have not really been consistent in neither direction, because they've had big missteps, but also they've had major performances also in the more difficult matches. So they have a sort of low flow,
yeah,
but my feeling. So with these kind of things, there is always the chance that they sort of flip the switch and begin playing consistently at the higher levels. They showed that they are capable of doing that. So if Juventus find that consistency, I think it is possible they are able to make up the ground, which we'll see what Milan will do tonight.
Yeah,
given all that many points they have to make up. So obviously we have to see what they will do against Napoli. That game will never be played at this point.
Yeah.
We don't know when the date will be decided. But yeah, if Juventus finds themselves to play at that high level they showed against Milan, against Barcelona, I think it is very much possible that they re-enter completely the Scudetto race. But at this point, I would give a leg up.
Yeah, I think it's to the amount of teams too. It's definitely a lot. Before we get to the Mercato, let's talk a little bit about the other teams. We're going to skip Milan because obviously we don't know the result, but we had a weekend, a disappointing draw for Atalanta against Genoa, Lazio dominating Roma on Friday, Napoli embarrassing Fiorentina 6-0. How do you rank these teams right now? You know, they seem to me in the mix for that last Champions League spot, and maybe we shouldn't even assume Juve won, but in any event, out of these four teams, Roma, Napoli, Atalanta, Lazio, how do you feel about them and in what order do you rank them?
Well, first of all, I would say that they are truly a lot closer than the last time we did this exercise. I feel like Napoli and Lazio closed the gap significantly. I would, despite the result in the derby, I would still put Roma first.
Wow.
I think, yes, they struggle in big games, and it's quite unclear why. But among the teams, it's the one that has the most consistency in the easier matches, and after all, that is most of the schedule. So I would still put Roma first in the bunch by a slim margin. I would put Napoli right behind them now that they found some rhythm. This match has returned, even though he's not fully 100% back. Kalidou Koulibaly has recovered. So even though I don't know about you, but I find the Napoli always a little bit underwhelming, even when they are successful as they have been in recent matches.
Yeah.
I think compared to Atalanta, they are a little more consistent, even though Atalanta is always capable of offensive explosion in every game. But probably Napoli will be a little more motivated to return in Champions League, while Atalanta will take what they're capable of, what is given to them in the standings, without necessarily making it a top priority. And finally, Lazio, I will put them slightly behind the others, only because they have a little bit of ground to make in the standings. But they surely have shown in the past the ability of ripping off lengthy runs. And probably out of the bunch, they are the most informed now, right now, especially without the Champions League taking a toll, and the roster is pretty much all available and in decent health. So I would keep an eye out for Lazio in the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah, I agree. Lazio, interesting team. We know their top players. I always say it. I would take Lazio's top 5 players really against anyone in Serie A, and they are doing well. And I'm with you, Napoli. I just don't trust them. Like, on paper, everything looks really good with Napoli, and I like Gattuso. I just can't put my finger on it. I you like Roma better than I do. I like Atalanta out of this group still the most. Let's do a little bit on the relegation race before we get to the Mercato. I have a couple of questions. I thought, look, that Spezia-Torino game, I thought was really interesting. I'm going to say it was more a failure on Torino than a great point by Spezia, but I have to give credit to Spezia. They always find ways to hold on. So do you think they are going to do better than Lecce last season and hold on? Do you feel better about their chances than, say, last time I spoke to you?
Well, I hope so, but realistically, I don't think so, because looking at the standings, I see a lot of teams that have a long history in Serie A and are more experienced. So even though at the moment they are playing surely more poorly than Spezia, that is doing fine, I expect that experience expertise to come through later in the season, while Spezia maybe will run into some difficulties. If you look at Parma, Torino, Cagliari, Genoa, Udinese, these are teams that have done it a lot of times in the past, that where they've looked good for the initial part of the season, that they are going on a run and secured the permanence in Serie A. So if we take it for granted, or maybe we shouldn't, that Benevento should be the one among the newly promoted teams that is the most safe. You have to envision two of the historic Serie A teams going down, and for me right now it's difficult to imagine that. So I would put just one in the bottom three and alongside the Spezia.
Okay, interesting. So let's talk about two teams that are in the relegation race. One of them we certainly expected a lot more from is Cagliari. I have to say, always the Di Francesco hire was left me a little bit of pause with Cagliari, although on paper they do look better than a lot of these teams. Udinese still have DePaul, who really is as good a player in the relegation race. They have a very good keeper. To me, Udinese are pretty solid, but their Gotti is on the hot seat as well. In your opinion, between these two teams, Cagliari and Udinese, who is in more trouble and who could potentially find themselves in danger of going down to Serie B the most?
Between the two, I would say Udinese, because even though Cagliari are actually in a tough moment, I think their roster is clearly superior, and they have more weapons they can rely on. Instead, Udinese have lost Cusetu, who has been their best striker so far, and until maybe Lasagna or maybe Okaka comes back and finds some consistency, I think Cagliari with João Pedro, with Raja Nainggolan, with Giovanni Simeone is really in a better spot, despite the recent crisis. So between the two, I like Cagliari's chances of turning it around better than Udinese.
Okay, let's talk about two teams that did a coaching change. Parma brought back D'Aversa. Torino almost certainly is going to bring in Nicola. I'm not sure if it's official, but it seems almost certain he'll be the coach. In your opinion, which of these teams gets a bigger boost by making the coaching change?
Well, it is inevitably Parma, because D'Aversa has a lot of familiarity with the roster. They've made some acquisitions in the summer, even though it wasn't really the summer. But the squad is pretty much unchanging. If he wants to go back to with all the players and that familiarity, that consistency with the system is always precious. While I think David and Nicola will call back on some of the things that Torino had under Mazzarri and Moreno Longo last year. He's still a new coach that has to familiarize with new players instead with the rest. It is a much smoother process.
Okay, let's transition to the mercato, something we both share a big passion for. So let's transition with a player that's still on Genoa, but will probably be leaving. He's owned by Sassuolo, Scamacca, who's become, you know, a target for quite a few of the top teams in Serie A. What do you make of him? And do you think the hype on Scamacca is justified?
Well, I wouldn't put too much hype on him, but he is certainly a good player, because he has done well where they were really struggling under Rolando Marande. He had a series of matches where they had just a chance or two per game, and he was always in the thick of it. I would have liked to see him used a little more now that they are faring better under Ballardini, but obviously Destro has broken out. It is fair for the coach to ride him while he's off. So, I think he's a good player. Unfortunately for him, the comparison with Simone Zaza is even too easy, because they were two players that flourished at Ascoli. They both were very flashy and a little outside, at least to what they say about him. I think it could be a decent best balance option for his style. He's a very energetic striker. But I don't know if at this point of his career it would be a right move for him to go be a third stringer in a top team. I think he would be better served playing consistently, maybe in a team of a lower caliber.
Yeah, I agree with that. And then there's Rovella, who is involved in one of the most fascinating transfer moves because of the financial aspect. We've covered that at length, but I don't feel like we've talked nearly enough about Rovella as a player. So tell us a little bit of Rovella, and let me ask you this. If I said the over-under for games played at Juve for Rovella at 3.5, would you take the over or the under?
Well, right now I will take the under and explain myself later. Staying with the player, I think is a very interesting prospect because, like Scamacca, he fared well in a moment where they were really struggling, and they just played with a lot of personality for somebody so young, and also in terms of skill set is really really interesting because the youth system was a pure regista, while he also has the dynamism of a box-to-box midfielder, so he could really be a complete midfielder down the line. That's what makes him a very, very appealing as of a prospect. On the other hand, while I like the Juventus trying to acquire a youngster, I no longer get my hopes up. They ultimately end up in the roster after what happened, especially with Cristian Romero recently, that I think was one of the more ready players they've had in a while, but they still ended up sending him away, selling him to do plus Valencia. So, yeah, I think it is a smart purchase, but paradoxically, I would have given more trust to the fact that he will indeed join Juventus if they maybe waited for him to get him when his contract expired, rather than making this deal with the Genoa that looks more like a financial machination than a real acquisition.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, let's talk a little bit about the acquisitions at Milan. Alex covered the Tomori angle really, really well. So let me ask you about the other two additions. Mete, who's official as we're recording, Mandzukic is in Milano taking the medical. I have to say, I kind of like these moves, especially Mete. I think it's kind of smart. I thought he was a pretty good player 2 years ago. Torino been bad for a while. And, you know, he definitely fills a need for depth. So I like that move. And then Mandzukic, it's a little bit hard to tell, but, you know, they definitely have more experience with him. So what do you make of what Milan's done? And do you like the Mete and Mandzukic signings?
Yeah, I think they are pretty good signings, considering that they didn't really have to invest a lot and that they needed depth in those positions. So I think any signing at that point would have been helpful. Yeah, Mete is a pretty interesting player, a little inconsistent though, and I'm not sure if it really fits the role he's going to play right away, because at Torino he has generally played in a different position, but they really don't need him to be a major asset. They just need some minutes, and after all, I think with his physical tools alone, he's going to do better than Radek in that position. So, consider also the February formula, it is a pretty decent pickup, and the same goes for Mandzukic, which the only doubt I have is why they didn't go for him sooner, since he was a free agent, and they really needed somebody when Zlatan Ibrahimovic was with an injury. So that it gives me a little pause, but with this move, they basically will not have to change the strategy when Ibra sits, because Mandžukić is a similar player. They simply switch reference point up from, not as talented as Ibrahimovic, but in terms of playing style is fairly similar. So put him in the lineup and if he's out, will not require many adjustments, while different from what they had to do so far.
Yep, I agree. Interesting perspective. I like what you said. A, it's interesting they didn't go after him sooner. But B, you're right. He has the advantage that he'll play in a very similar style as Ibra. So I like that. Well said. So let me ask you this. There's been, you know, it hasn't been the most active January window, to say the least. But what has been your favorite move so far?
Well, so far, I would say Cagliari bringing back Rajan Angolan has been maybe hands down the best deal of the month, especially now that Cagliari are plunging in the standings. They will need his charisma, his playmaking. So they paid basically the salary, so it was a very smart pickup. I think it will end up being a very helpful, considering that they had just lost Marco Rogu, who was an important piece of their lineup. They can slide in Nangola almost immediately, so it will be a big help.
Okay, I like it. That's a good shout for sure. So let's close on this, Enrico. You were very high on Vlahović for a while. You know, I have to say he was a late bloomer, but he's been excellent recently. And I love Muriel, and I think there's been a lot of love for him going on right now, rightfully so. So from here on out, it's January 18th to the end of the season in Serie A. Who do you think is going to score more goals, Vlahović or Muriel?
Well, despite the fact that Vlahović has finally hit his stride, I think Muriel is going to be the more prolific of the duo, simply because of the style of Atalanta. Fiorentina remains a team that plays with a really slow rhythm. They do not generate much offense, many chances, to his credit, Vlahović has been pretty clinical, but on the other hand, Muriel just needs 10 minutes to score. And Atalanta, in more games than not, they end up scoring multiple goals. So I would give an edge to Muriel.
Okay, great stuff, Enrico. Always a pleasure to chat with you. Everyone follow our favorite linesman at Guardaline. Always great stuff. I know I look forward also to your articles on our Patreon page. Thank you so much for doing the show today. As always, great content. Grazie, Enrico.
Thank you, David, and talk to you next time.